buddy.
Hi, guys. Well, from fall in Salt Lake City,
it's Thank God I'm Atheist,
the podcast.
I'm Frank Feldman.
I'm Dan Beecher.
And coming up today, we're going to talk about Mormons in Congress.
Are we going to talk about the fact that you still take a physical newspaper? Is that what we're going to talk about?
No. Look at it.
Yeah.
It's a newspaper.
You've brought a physical newspaper into our studio. It's amazing.
Yeah. And it has a wonderful headline across the top.
Yeah.
It gets your attention in a way that the internet never does. It says, LDS lawmakers still a force. And you're like, what? Still a force? What changed?
We're talking about Mormons in Congress.
Yeah. This new Congress that will convene in January will have the fewest number of Mormons since 1990.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah. And so that's really interesting. There's been a shift.
Yeah.
In Mormon representation on the Capitol Hill.
Crazy.
So crazy. Well, Dan.
Yeah.
I've got a story about Jews on a plane.
Oh, dear.
This comes up every so often.
Yeah, you know what? especially if they're ultra-Orthodox, they're just causing trouble on a plane.
Ultra-Orthodox, it's like they can't even get on a plane without causing problems.
And it's not, they long since solved the kosher meal dilemma.
Yeah.
It is something much weirder.
Oh, yeah.
Than that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what your story is, but I know we've seen guys wrap themselves in plastic.
Yeah.
We've seen all kinds of things.
We've seen all kinds of things. Well, this time, Dan, it involved two flights. The same thing was going on at the same time on two flights from New York City to Israel.
Oh, my.
Two planes left New York. Way too late to get the passengers home by Sabbath.
Oh, dear. Okay.
And so the ultra-Orthodox passengers fucking lost their minds.
What?
They started taking it out on the flight attendants, yelling at them, calling them liars, calling them, saying that they that they're fraudsters.
Oh, because they did this on purpose?
Oh, yeah. Well, because they... because the flights had been delayed.
Right.
They were on the ground in New York, and they'd been delayed a couple hours.
Right.
And they were told when they were, pulling away from the gate that, don't worry, we'll have you home by sundown. Right.
Okay.
And turns out, as they start, doing the math, they wouldn't be getting home in time.
Sure. Right?
And so they started getting really aggressive and unruly with the flight attendants, to the point that, and here's a woman who, by the name of Roni Meidel, this is her a quote from her after the flight. After 24 hours to reach Israel, I am broken. Broken mainly because of the lack of respect of people who are observant, who observe tradition and Shabbat, who took this issue a step too far. She says after about 6 hours of flying.
Because they're the ones that took the issue too far. The airline is the ones that took the issue too far.
No, she's upset
she's
ultra-Orthodox.
At the ultra-Orthodox.
Right? Okay, she says, after 6 hours of flying, I suddenly heard screaming and saw a flight attendant crying after she was hit, pushed, amid threats they would break open the door to the cockpit. I found myself standing and physically protecting flight attendants who were crying and who just wanted to catch their breath after the violent behavior toward them.
Jesus Christ.
So
where are the air marshals? Where,
you would expect Israel to have air marshals.
You are now essentially hijacking a plane. You are doing you are a terrorist at this point.
Due to their behavior.
Yeah.
One of the planes landed in Athens.
Right.
The pilots were like, fuck it.
You're off.
We're getting them off the plane.
Yeah.
Right? So they were allowed to disembark, and they spent Shabbat in Athens before continuing on their way to Israel.
Yeah. Just get
Why
off
weren't they arrested?
Right? Yeah. That's arrest these people.
Absolutely. The other plane was going to divert to Rome, but then somebody on the plane or whatever has like some medical condition or something, and they had to get them back
to Israel.
To Israel in order to have their she had to get to Israel for treatment or something. I'm not quite sure what it was. Yeah, so El Al Airlines, yeah. They are the ones who had to deal with this.
These were both El Al flights?
They were both El Al.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. They said, we apologize for any discomfort caused to our customers, but as said, we preferred to have the flight leave New York the same day. It should be emphasized the company does not tolerate violence toward the flight crew, and we will determinedly and without compromise act in accordance with the law against any passenger whom a complaint is filed against, as we have done so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. The Haredi are out of control. They are out of control. And I'm going to now transition to a story in Jerusalem.
Uh-oh.
Because you said that, because that was your story. Because of an interesting clash is playing out right now between the Haredi, the ultra-Orthodox, and the more secular Jews of Israel.
Okay.
Because there is now a mayoral race for mayor of Jerusalem, and it is between a secular Jew and a ultra-Orthodox. Moshe Lion is the Orthodox. I don't know why words don't work in my face. And Ofer Berkovich is the secular guy.
Okay.
And you would think, okay, you know, there are issues, you know, but there are populations that need to be served by here.
Right.
But the stated platform of the ultra-Orthodox guy is to do with things like making sure that public transportation does not run on Shabbat.
Oh.
To make sure that businesses are closed on Shabbat.
What?
Like, it's basically the same as ultra right wing Christians in the U.S.
Right.
They want to force everybody to operate on their rules, the way to do, you know, the
what
things
is
that
wrong
they all
with these people.
It's so funny to me. Like, what? Look, do your thing.
Yep, absolutely.
And if, you know, and if society needs to make a few accommodations so that you can do your thing, I'm actually okay with a few things.
Depending on the things.
But, you know, as long as you're reasonable, we'll help you out. But to say everybody in society has to do our thing is nuts. And it's literally that stuff. Now, the demographics in Jerusalem are really interesting.
Okay.
About 60% of Jerusalem's population is Jewish.
Okay.
The other 40% are Arab.
Right. Okay.
So, but Arab Muslims, so, and of the Arab population, interestingly, about 99% are Muslim and 1% are Christian.
Oh, okay.
But Arab Muslims largely do not participate in the elections, in Israeli elections.
Okay.
They just sort of
sit it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I think is weird.
Yeah, they need to take a lesson from the evangelicals in this country. But who used to do the same thing.
But the Palestinian leadership has decreed...
I wish they would do it again.
...a boycott to Israeli election.
Oh, boy. See...
So, I don't know that that's useful, but...
That's not how democracy works, guys.
Well...
If you sit out of an
election...
I'm
guessing the democracy, even in a democracy, the democracy doesn't work for them.
Well, fair enough. But, like, if you just sit out an election...
Right.
Yeah,
what do you
expect?
You can sway an election. So, you know, with a 40% voting block, you can change the results of an election.
Especially when there's a ding-dong running who's going to cause you problems.
Right.
Versus a guy who probably just, you know, whatever. He's not going to cause you those problems.
Of Jerusalem's Jews, 60%, which is 60% of the population, it's about half and half. Haredi versus secular.
Oh, my God.
So
what's
going
to happen?
I don't know.
They need to just get a few Muslims to show up.
Yeah.
Because you don't want that ultra-Orthodox guy in.
No.
I mean, I know so much about, you know, all the politics.
Yeah.
But just based on that?
Just based, look, you don't want a fundamentalist religious person running anything.
Yeah, that's true.
You can run your church. Right. That's the only thing we want to allow you to run. Fundamentalism is it is blind.
Yeah, and it's, has that spillover problem, right?
Yeah.
What's good for us is good for everyone.
Right. Right. And only what's good for us is okay for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have the direct line on what God has said, and the rest of you people are trying to thwart what God has said, so right. We are justified fully
right.
in preventing you from doing anything we don't want you to do.
Sure, yeah.
Including attacking people on airplanes, apparently.
Yeah. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Land this plane!
The sun's going down. God will hate me.
Yeah.
I hope shut the fuck up.
It's also out of your control.
Yeah,
you're telling me that God is like...
Your God cannot abide an accident.
Right.
You know, something that was out of your control.
But here's the deal, Dan. They got the plane
to land.
Got the plane to land.
You know, if they just...
And they got to observe Sabbath.
If they just went west instead of east, maybe they could chase that sun...
Turn this plane around!
Then they can...
They could have the longest Sabbath ever.
Yeah.
And it would just be amazing.
Oh. Cross the date line.
I never want this day to end.
Maybe they can have two Sabbaths. I don't know.
Oh, my God. All right, Dan. Australia.
Yes?
Had a magazine called White.
Oh. well...
What do you think initially, the focus of White Magazine was?
I'm really hoping it's about paper.
It's about weddings.
Oh.
Adorable.
Okay.
Oh, White. White Magazine.
In these United States, if you call something just white, it's not a good thing.
That would not be a good
thing. That's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Good. White Magazine.
White Magazine.
Okay.
Not
that I'm into bridal shit, but okay. Right.
Owned and operated by Luke and Carla Burrell. It recently closed after advertisers started abandoning the magazine.
Oh.
It became clear that in the wake of Australia legalizing gay marriage, that White Magazine strangely still only ever had straight couples in
okay.
its pages.
Sure.
And became also clearer after photographer Laura Holtz, she did some cover photography for them, actually said that it was basically their policy to keep same-sex couples out of the magazine.
Sure. See, we thought they were going to be racist, but they turned out to be homophobic. They tricked us. Came at it from another angle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But anyway, so advertisers started pulling back and saying, no, we don't want to support this. If they have this policy, that's no good.
Yeah.
Some people were like, well, maybe they should just be clear about the policy. And others... decided that first of all the Burrells came out and said things like White Magazine has always been a secular publication, but as its publishers we are Christian. We have no agenda but to love.
Yeah, Christians love to couch their hate in love.
Like many people, we have had to reflect on our beliefs. It's a long and continuing journey. However, as was reflected by majority of the people and the public and advertisers and everything, it's just not a cool stance to be taken in this day and age. But here's a quote from somebody who supports the paper or the magazine. Unfortunately, today, if you have faith and don't agree with same-sex marriage, you can't run your own business the way you want.
Oh, no,
yeah, you can.
You 100% can.
You absolutely can run that business however you want.
Right.
What the public doesn't have to do is support your business.
Right. Or and like it or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all that happened here.
Right.
They took a stance. They didn't back down when it became clear that they were losing money because of that stance. Yeah. It's a fucking business.
Yeah.
Right. And if you let something stupid like your Christian beliefs get in the way.
Yeah. It's not like
you deserve it.
Like no atheist group would ever complain that they're Christians aren't patronizing their, you know, their whatever, their blog or something, because they know when they start out, they're not going to get that patronage. Right.
They needed to pivot. I think they should have gone all Christian all the way.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows? In Australia, the landscape being what it is there, who knows if that would have worked.
Yeah.
In the U.S., that would have been the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Christian bride.
Yep.
No shoulders ever shown.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe they could just title it No Shoulders. That's the name of their magazine.
Or just, that didn't work. I was going to say pasty, but that didn't.
Nope. Means something different. All right. I'm going to take us to Nairobi, to Kenya, where not Nairobi, but a small town in Kenya called Bahati, in western Kenya, where a small incident has sort of brought into relief a very big problem in Kenya.
Oh?
Which is that, okay, so I'll paint a picture for you.
Please do.
Since we're on the wedding subject, imagine that you are a guest at your friend's wedding.
Yes, okay.
You've shown up. You've put on your formal best, shown up at this wedding, and you're waiting. It's been a minute,
okay.
and then it's been a long, 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 long time, and then it's been hours, and then it's been 8 hours.
What?
And then you're told that the wedding's not happening.
Oh, how sad.
That would be sad. The reason that this happened at the wedding of Joyce Waithera and Paul Waitaka is that they were required by their pastor, who is a Pentecostal pastor, that they must both take multiple HIV tests and that she must take pregnancy tests.
What?
And when this finally all did go down, one of the HIV tests came back positive Ms. Waithera.
Okay.
And also it turns out that she was pregnant. And their pastor decided he would not do that wedding.
Because she was preggers.
Because she was HIV positive and preggers.
Oh, okay.
So it turns out, and we know that in Kenya, HIV is still a big, really, really big problem. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It turns out that a lot of pastors are being assholes about it.
Huh.
Like judgmental pricks about it and calling it a moral failing. I mean, granted, it likely does say that the person has engaged in some behavior that is not prescribed by traditional Christianity.
It's possible. There are other ways to get HIV.
Yeah. There are lots of ways to get it.
Right.
But, you know, that's one of the
likelihood, I guess, is where we're talking. Maybe.
Yeah, or whatever. But it doesn't matter. Even just then, who cares?
She could just be using intravenous drugs.
Yeah.
And sharing needles.
Well, that's also not Christian.
No, come on. It's not sex.
Right, which in, at least in the Christian world, the pseudo-Christian world that you and I grew up in, sex is way worse than drugs.
Right. Oh, yeah.
All right. Ugh. Maybe not worse than Coca-Cola. Like, caffeine might be the worst.
Oh, it's just
coffee. Not worse than coffee,
yeah,
obviously.
Coffee is terrible.
Really bad.
Oh, my God. What the fuck is wrong with you?
But yeah, it's a very interesting thing that's happening right now in sub-Saharan Africa. Where a lot of churches are refusing to do weddings for HIV positive people. And one of their excuses is that if the other person is not HIV positive, they could be sentencing them to death.
Yeah. Okay.
From AIDS.
Wow.
That is not necessarily how that works.
Right.
It is also not how consent between two adults works, and also, why is it any of your business at all?
He's a religious leader.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, judgy
he
and...
That is his role. He is supposed to judge.
Is he?
That is what he's supposed to do.
Certainly doing it.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Yeah.
Probably, maybe even attended a seminar.
There are a lot of pastors and priests working against that that stereotype or that or that kind of prejudice.
Right.
They're including there's an organization for religious leaders who are HIV positive themselves with. The longest, here's the title of this organization, the International Network of Religious Leaders Living With or Personally Affected by HIV and AIDS. That's the name of the group.
It's a beautiful name.
It's a very, very well-crafted name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I would enjoy being a receptionist at that.
Well, the acronym that they use is INRELA, which actually isn't, they've added some letters to make the acronym work, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And taken away some other letters. Anyway, it's a struggle there in Africa.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Dan.
Yo.
Got a very interesting story here about ISIS.
I've heard of them.
Or I guess I should just say Islamist extremists.
Oh, in general.
Sure. And hackers.
Okay.
So there's a thing, right?
Sure.
Islamist hackers. They get online.
Yeah.
They wreak havoc.
Look, all the good wars are being fought online these days.
Yeah, but there's a big question. Why have we not had sort of a cyber 9/11?
Uh-huh.
And according to Robert Graham, who is a consultant at Errata Security, he's taking the stance that hasn't taken place in large part because the hackers who joined the ranks of the Islamic extremists online learned their hacking skills to gain access to gay porn.
What?
No, follow me. You got it. This takes a second, right?
Okay.
I was like, "What?
Okay.
What in the fuck is this article about?"
So you're saying in the Middle East,
if you live in the Middle East, you can't just
pull up some gay porn,
right?
You'll get yourself arrested, possibly killed.
So you have to learn. So,
okay,
the smart man who's interested in looking at gay porn learns hacker skills.
Right.
And so they're incentivized to learn. So the greatest talent pool that they have for hacking.
Of Middle Eastern hacking.
Is men who are interested in having sex with men. Whether or not they probably are men who have sex with men.
In Israel, is it called hacking?
I don't know. Good God. Anyway.
I thought that was funny. It's fine.
So... So a basic initiation, right, in order to get into any of these hacker groups is to send them a picture of your genitalia.
Interesting.
So they actually also, they know who they are. They know who their cohort is made up of.
Right.
And they protect that sphere by making sure that the new initiates into their ranks are of sort of the same as them.
Wow.
So they've worked to protect it.
And you would think that that gay men in the Middle East are less incentivized to do Islamic terror. Having been victims of Islamic terror themselves, essentially.
It's more, I think, the motivations that led them to gain the skills, right? So, and who controls access to sort of the greatest knowledge base.
Interesting.
Right, in the region and speaking the language and all that kind of stuff. But
surely it's not that big of a hack to be able to sort of anonymously find and navigate.
I think it starts you on the path.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
And it's also, they operate a whole dark web.
Right. Right.
Where they're trading pictures, right, and videos,
sure,
and what have you, right? But this dude, what was his name again? Graham, Robert Graham. He says, from our Western perspective, we'd think gay young men would be on our side, motivated to fight against their own governments in defense of gay rights, right?
Sure.
In order to achieve marriage equality. None of them want that, as far as I can tell. Their goal is to get married and have children.
Okay.
Sure, they want gay sex and intimate relationships with men, but they also want a subservient wife who manages the household and the deep family ties that come with spawning progeny.
Right. They want to blend and, yeah, and be able to operate in society.
They're products of their culture.
Yeah.
They recognize their sexual desires,
yeah,
and needs, and they figured out how to sort of network and get in touch with each other, and they will. I mean, I don't know if these men want to line up with ISIS. I was probably wrong in saying,
yeah,
ISIS, but they do want to aid the more conservative factions in their societies,
right?
Apparently, according to this one guy.
Yeah,
I just thought it was a fascinating thing that no matter what, if his theory is right about why there hasn't been a cyber 9/11 and all this kind of crap, who cares?
Yeah.
What I found fascinating about the whole thing is that it exists,
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
Right.
And of course it would have to.
And that it leads specifically to hacker skills.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well,
thought that was fun.
There you go, Mr. Robot. Have some fun with that. I'm going to take us now to, tis the season, Frank. The war on Christmas. I'm not even talking really about the war on Christmas,
no,
but the struggle.
After 7 years, Dan.
Our struggle is real, though.
Oh, okay.
In terms of just always just like, you know, just stop favoring the Christians over everybody else in our country in taxpayer funded space.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
So, of course, now is the time for that to happen. I take you to Bethel, Connecticut, where American atheists were contacted last year because they were putting up a nativity scene,
okay,
outside the town's municipal building, and at least one resident wanted to counter it with a display of his own. That's
okay.
That's sort of our go-to now, you
right.
know. When you know we can't get them to take it down, but we can at least say, okay, we'll put up our own
if
thing
can't
too.
Can't beat them, join them.
Thank you very much. And legally, that seems to have been what works.
Okay,
you know what I mean. Like we sue to, you know, you can't. We just sue for equality, for
right.
equal time, equal space, whatever.
Right.
So the American atheists contacted the town and said, hey, how do we get an application in? And they were like, well, it's too late for this year. We don't do blah, blah, blah. But they did start an application process for this year. That was last
good.
Year. You say, oh, good. But fool, I say.
What happened?
So basically, they announced at a city, at some sort of town meeting, that there was really only room for one display. So the first application in, we will accept. Guess when that first application was in? Hours before that meeting.
Oh, my God.
They rigged it. They rigged it.
Oh, my God. So there's only... That's ludicrous.
Yeah.
I'm sure that will... totally stand. How is it true they only had space for one?
No, of course
it was in a park.
That's never true. No, it was in a space in front of a building, in front of the municipal building.
Oh, fuck these people.
Yeah. They said that, yeah, due to concerns with the limited space, the board would just accept the first completed application they received, which they had already received and accepted.
I love that these boards are so stupid. They just waste everybody's time, including their own.
Yeah.
Right? On just stupid issues.
Yeah.
This makes me crazy.
So, yeah, they literally... So now, I mean, I'm guessing the fight goes on, and next year, guess how early that application's going in?
December 26th.
January 1st, I'm guessing. That's when I'd get mine in. It's just so stupid. It's just so dumb. I mean, all they have to do is move that same nativity to a nearby church.
Uh-huh.
Or a business, or a house, or whatever, and yeah. Everything's fine.
Or they can just keep Jesus in their heart.
Yeah.
For the season.
Yeah.
Right? That's where Jesus belongs.
Yeah.
It's in your heart. Not in the park.
Your stupid, ugly, like, plywood nativity scene.
Oh, Jesus doesn't care about it. I promise you.
That doesn't do anything for anybody.
If Jesus existed, he wouldn't care about
oh my God.
Your cheap-ass little nativity scene.
There you go.
Who cares?
Who does care? It's. I mean, other than you're depicting an event that is so unlikely as to strain all credulity.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Anyway, well, there you go. Hey, if you guys have a nativity that's in your town, write to us. Tell us about it. Podcast at thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, hey, listen, all the wise men and women go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
Or you know, and while you're on Facebook, search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge or request to join. It is a closed group, but we'll let you in.
Yeah, look for a star. It will guide you there.
Hey, Dan.
Yes, sir.
Are you as concerned about the continued cancer problem in America and the world, that people are just dying of cancer?
The actual disease?
Cancer, yes.
Not some metaphor for something.
No. Actual physical cancer. I'm concerned that we still... Richard Nixon declared a war on cancer, and we still don't have a cure.
Yeah, he wasn't...
What the fuck?
He wasn't good at wars. Richard Nixon.
Wasn't it Nixon who declared a war on cancer? Anyway, nonetheless, fortunately, though, God is about to hand out a solution.
Oh, thank goodness.
And what this asshat is tying it all into, it's wonderful and horrible. And
yeah,
it's wonderful.
Because you'll recall, I'll remind listeners that what he's talking about is the shooting at the synagogue
at the Tree of Life synagogue.
At the Tree of Life, right.
Hank Kunneman is who is about to open his mouth.
Dynamic.
Laugh if you may, mock if you may, but God says you cannot and will not stop me. Therefore, listen, at the place of Pittsburgh, the Tree of Life. Look closely, there's something of life that's going to come now, for their blood speaks. God says there has been a signing into law. Those who've been afflicted that can find no cure, no help. That medical cures that are out there that exist, but they've been stopped through bureaucracy. They've been stopped through politics. They've been stopped through legislation. Spirit of God says, my compassion now, you'll see it this week. In your midterm elections, and you're going to see it as you turn into a new year. My compassion shall outweigh your politics. My compassion shall outweigh your medical, and I will cause it to rain upon the just and the unjust. Why do I speak this? Because God says, from those who died at the place of Tree of Life, I will cause this president to join hands with the president, as he already has, of Israel. What is he, the prime minister? What is he? Huh? What is he? Prime minister. Netanyahu. They've already joined hands, but now they're going to join hands because in Israel, there came a healing balm. Already once, God says there's medical cures and scientific discoveries that are in Israel, and now they will join hands with the United States of America. And God says, watch as cancer shall be known as a thing of the past, says the Lord. Diabetes, Alzheimer's, shall be known as a thing of the past, says the Lord. Watch, their blood is not in vain. And watch my compassion, says the Spirit of God.
Wow. Why don't we have a guitarist and a drummer behind us?
It's so much more, it's just enthralling.
It really builds the mood.
I almost believe that the governments have been suppressing the cure for cancer, diabetes, and Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
This is likely. This is the most amazing thing about, you know, these conspiracy theorists get out there and they say this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the firefighter prophet guy, he's been saying for a long time that they have the cures for these things and that Trump's going to release them.
Okay.
Okay. It's been 2 years.
Yeah. What is he waiting for?
When? Right. Go.
Because the man could die of a heart attack at any moment.
Right.
He better get on this.
Well, maybe he's saving it for himself. He doesn't want other people to have it.
He's going to test it out.
He's going to live forever.
On him.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. No, it's...
The government does not have the cures for these things.
I hate these conspiracy theories so much.
But I do love it that these people go out of their way to say, God told me.
Right.
We're going to cure blop, blop, and blop soon. Like, this is happening now-ish. Hurrah. And then we all get to sit back and go, so when's that cancer cure coming there, buddy?
Yeah, but it made for a good sermon.
He got the
audience all riled up.
And that's the thing. They don't hold these people to account. When these prophecies don't come true, you would think that their congregation would be like, hey, wait a minute.
Didn't you say something
He said blah, 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 blah. He said cancer. He said diabetes. He said Alzheimer's. They're going away. My mom has Alzheimer's right now. What's going on? Uh-huh. Where's the cure?
Yeah.
They don't hold him accountable at all. Right. He just said that it's tied in to this to the massacre at the synagogue.
Well, then it better happen soon.
Right. If God has said, hey, and by the way, that's a shitty way for a God to work. If your God is like
they don't believe in a good God.
Let me tell you something. I guess I owe you one on that one. That was pretty shitty to have that happen.
I was taking a nap.
You know what I'm going to do?
Too bad.
I'm going to cure your cancer. We're just going to give you cancer cure right now because of that.
They believe in the worst supreme being.
Yeah, their God sucks.
Yeah. Like, why would you waste your time believing and adoring such a piece of shit?
Yeah. If you believe in that God, the God that looks at a major tragedy and then says, okay, well, I'll give you the cure for cancer to make you feel better. As opposed to a God who would never have allowed the tragedy or the cancer in the first place. Fuck your God.
Yeah.
Your God sucks.
Yeah. As soon as your God is willing to become an intermediary on whatever issue or to come in and answer the occasional prayer, you believe in a shitty God.
You believe in a dumb, dumb God.
Because if we live in this world and there's a being up there who can make it better, that's a horrible being.
And that being is waiting.
Yeah.
Just chilling. And then somebody goes, hey, God, can you change this? And God's like, oh, hadn't even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Of course I'll change that.
Right.
Great. Ding, dong, ding. We're done.
Yeah. And if you want to sit around and believe in a God because you just have some necessity to do so, and the God doesn't intervene ever, also a shitty God.
Yep. Yep. You're not.
Because then it's just this indifferent thing. Why are you bothering adoring it?
You're bad at gods, you guys.
Yeah.
You guys are bad at gods.
Gods suck.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Terrible idea.
All right. Well, we had some folks write into us. Keth wrote in, said, "Hey, guys, I heard something this morning that reminded me of your recent discussion about religious things in public spaces. I don't believe this is publicly funded, but it made me think of your recent podcasts. Our local NPR station, that's a national public radio station, has a series where they answer questions that people wonder about and send in. This morning's topic was a strange, nearly invisible wire that can be found in a couple right. of areas, which enclose whole city blocks. Turns out it's religious and par for the course of absurd." And then Keth has sent us a link. "It seems to me that if you need to make up silly..." So this is a link to an Eruv, which is the Orthodox Jewish thing where... And you can see this in parts of New York. You can see this in certain neighborhoods in, you know, in New Jersey, places where there are high concentrations of ultra-Orthodox Jews.
Right.
They do this wire high up above the city, enclosing several blocks. And what it does, by their reckoning, is that those become walls,
right?
These barely visible lines that are usually on the top of like telephone poles or, you know,
right,
street lamps or whatever,
right?
And then those walls become the walls of your home, and then right. you can do things on Shabbat, on Sabbath, that you can't do outside of your home,
right,
on Sabbath. Like, do, you know, various kinds of work are forbidden. You know, carrying your baby is one example that this link said, where, like...
Why can't you carry a baby?
Because it's work? Here's the thing. The way that the sort of rabbinical process seems to work in Orthodox Judaism is that, one, is that so somebody comes... There's a rule. And the rule is, don't do work on the Sabbath. Because some rabbi has interpreted one scripture to say that you don't want to do labor on the Sabbath.
Right.
And then they go to the other rabbis and they say, what counts as labor? And then these guys pick and parse and get just, it's not, this is not for the individual to decide.
Right.
Then the rabbis say, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't flip a switch. That's labor. You don't want to operate anything, any machinery. Oh, but does a blender count as a machinery? Well, blah, 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 blah. And they just go nuts. And then the work begins of finding the loopholes.
Right.
And it's like, well, I didn't flip a switch. All I did was remove a thing from a thing, and that's not labor. I just pulled the thing out, and that actually activates the light, but in a totally different way. So I win. God loses, ha ha, fuck you. And so, like, the Eruv is an amazing thing. Apparently, the wall around the city of Jerusalem, that counts. So, they can go all over Jerusalem.
Oh, shut up.
But you can't build a wall. So, you
really want to live in an ultra-Orthodox community.
Well, what you want to live in because is a city with a wall.
Right. But if you're off, you know, on your own...
Yeah.
Just, you know, some lone...
You're trapped.
You know, Orthodox Jew in suburbia somewhere.
Yeah.
God, your life would suck.
Yeah, you're trapped. You're trapped.
Kind of be in your house or else you can't carry your baby.
Well, I mean, I'm surprised these people don't get together and do just a one long Eruv around the entire country of the United States of America. Just a wire that goes all the way around. And then they can do anything they want. Just launch it into space.
Well, do they have to own the wire? Is that part of it? Because couldn't you just say, hey, that one over there?
Yeah, right? There's wires everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to map out that wire goes to there, and that wire goes over there, and that...
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just finding loopholes for God anyway. Do it however you want.
Yeah. Couldn't you, like, you know, like, make a phone call that's, like, bouncing off... You know, getting routed through all these different cities.
Oh, how are you going to make that phone call?
You make it before sundown on Shabbat.
Can you do a voice-activated phone call?
What about Alexa?
Is Alexa...
They love Alexa.
Is Alexa okay
on Shabbat?
Alexa,
turn on the lights.
Yeah.
But would she be like considered like a servant?
No, you know what she is?
What?
She's a Shabbat goy.
Oh, you're right.
She's a person that you ask to come into your home to do Alexa for Jews.
I love it. I bet it's a thing.
I'll bet it's a thing. We did not just invent
that. We need to
that.
Research
That's a real
that.
Thing. Anyway, Keth closed by saying, it seems to me that if you need to make up silly exclusions and loopholes to your religious rules, do you really respect them? And why do you even have them? Well, it's a great question. That's one for the rabbis. And they've answered it multiple times. Anyway, thanks for writing in. I want to thank, we've got some folks to thank. I do want to thank one person. Daniel has given us a one-time donation. So thank you so much to Daniel. We have an announcement.
Yes.
This is big, you guys.
We're doing something new.
It's for the holiday season.
Yeah.
And we're doing it, and it's going to be big. For the month of December,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a time of charitable giving.
Uh-huh.
It's a time of donation.
Right.
All the money that we take in the month of December.
Right.
On our Patreon, we are going to give 20% of it to the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Absolutely. This goes for both new patrons and for existing patrons.
That's right.
So it's basically all of the support that you guys give us, we decided to give 20% of it over
So we're hoping to get a whole bunch of new donors because we want to give as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time to start signing up. We are going to hit this for the entire month of December.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want to give them as much as possible. So go to thankgodimatheist.com,
mm-hmm.
Click on the support tab, and start. If you do a continuing donation,
mm-hmm.
you can start it now. And once we hit December, all of the money that we bring in will be included in that tally.
Absolutely. And you can do so by going to our website.
Yeah, like I said, thankgodimatheist.com. You click on that support tab, and that will launch this thing. We'll be talking about it more. We'll probably have somebody from the FFRF on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a good time. But you know, 'tis the season for giving, and we just wanted to pay it forward.
Absolutely.
So help us, you know, do some good in the world by doing that. And we also have to thank
our Lord and Savior, our top donor.
Yes. Long may she wave.
She that is Jenny!
And she certainly is. Thank you so much.
Hey, Dan.
Yes, sir.
So this was an interesting
you've got the paper
season election
yeah
and, season midterms
yeah we had the midterm elections here in these United States,
and this is they're called the midterms because it's actually the middle of the presidential term,
right? Traditionally a lower turnout for the midterms,
because
although this year
it's only Congress.
Right.
It's only, who cares about Congress?
It's only senators
and
Congress
people that write and pass the laws.
Right.
But nonetheless, every 2 years, the entire House of Representatives is up for election. And a third, roughly a third, of the Senate is up for re-election.
Right.
Because that's a six-year term, for those of you not in the know. And so with that came a bit of an upheaval, because Trump's America doesn't necessarily like Trump.
People
showed up in large numbers, but his supporters also knew that, so they showed up, and it was, like you were about to say, amazing turnout.
Oh no, a wildly successful turnout.
Yeah, 80% of Salt Lake County voted.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
If you can believe that. As far as voter turnout.
Right.
But one of the things that is interesting in light of our show, and especially us as Utahns, surrounded by Mormons, is this idea of Mormon representation in Congress. Because Mormons like to run for office.
They really do. And they tend to do a pretty good job of it, even outside of Utah.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a very interesting fact.
I mean, they haven't always done great. You stray too far from the Mormon belt, and it gets harder and harder. But there are examples that pop up.
Yeah. Mittens and Romney, up until this year,
yeah,
all of his political aspirations happened outside of Utah.
Yeah, absolutely. And his father was governor of Michigan and all that kind of crap.
And he of Massachusetts.
He of Massachusetts, yeah. And, and they're not always Republicans. That's something else that we should point out. Harry Reid, you know, the
famous. Yes.
He was the
majority
leader in the Senate, which means that Harry Reid, as a Democrat, is the Mormon, the highest ranking Mormon ever in government.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ha ha. He was a Democrat.
He was a Dem. But nonetheless, they lost some more. There are some Mormons, though, in the tally. The peak of Mormon representation in Congress was back in the 2001 and 2003 Congresses. Let's see, there were 18 members of Congress who were Mormon. And then it dropped off to 16, then down to 12, and then it came back up 14 15 15 16, dropped a little bit again, and then this year kablammy, down to 11, which means, and we did the math, 2% of Congress, totally of Congress, so that's Senate added in with the
House
of Representatives.
Sure.
2% of that total number is Mormon. And their makeup in the country is, what, 1.5% or something like that?
Yeah, 1.6% in the U.S. of the U.S. population is Mormon.
Yeah.
According to Pew.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So they've always been overrepresented.
In recent years, yes.
And
recent decades.
And now it's sort of coming closer to in line with their actual demography.
Oh, lovely.
In terms of their representation.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. I don't know. Like, yeah, we're... Now, we do have some ex-Mormons also in the Congress.
Yes. One who just got into the Congress.
Yeah, if you haven't been following the Kyrsten Sinema
thing. She's a former Mormon.
She's fascinating.
She's bisexual.
Yeah.
She's the first openly bisexual person, right, in Congress.
Yeah.
And she grew up Mormon.
Isn't that interesting? She's in Arizona, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Arizona, traditionally very conservative.
Yeah.
But
and she won just by, like, just...
Oh, a hair's breadth. Yeah. But amazing that she pulled it off.
Yeah. And then, of course, we usually fail to remember, of course, that Marco Rubio was Mormon when he was a little tyke. I don't know how old he got before he left, but
I just don't even want to think about Marco Rubio in any context. The man is just so creepy weird. Anyway, yes, he was also a foreman, yeah, meaning a former Mormon. It is interesting that who is drawn to politics and who isn't, because we, for the longest time, we've had pretty big overrepresentation of Mormonism in politics,
mm-hmm,
in national politics. Judaism is wildly overrepresented,
right,
in politics,
right.
And one wonders about what it is about these groups that,
yeah,
is. But I mean, I look at these groups. I look at Judaism. I see an emphasis on education,
mm-hmm,
specifically a lot of people being sent to be lawyers. Sent by their Jewish mother to be lawyers and doctors and that sort of,
right,
thing. But that seems to be something that people feel qualifies someone for public office.
Yeah, we tend to, well, all it takes is if the person has money. That's usually about it.
Well, there you go. That's also a thing.
That's why you see a lot of, like, Well, there's a lot of reasons why you see like real estate developers run for, especially like state houses mm-hmm. and whatnot, because they like those laws that are favorable.
Yeah.
To building things, it's also the people who have the time. Right? Like if you are and have the means to sort of arrange things at your place of employment.
Right.
Right. So you have to be a little bit higher up. You know, if you're the standard wage earner.
Yeah.
Or perhaps somebody in the service industry or hospitality or whatever. These are really hard, fields to also run for office, which is why,
right.
I pulled her name out of thin air the other day. The Cortez.
What is her name?
Crap. Anyway, you'll look it up, and everybody knows who I'm talking about. But the bartender from New York City,
right?
Who just got into the Congress, and you know she is such an exception there, but she's facing the problem of. She can't afford rent in D.C. until her first congressional paycheck comes through.
Right. Alexandria or Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes, exactly. And so like, it's really rare that you have the person who doesn't already have some means of some kind actually end up in one of these,
and usually
national
and
office.
Usually it's means of a big kind.
Yeah,
it's we're talking millionaires.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who know a bunch of other millionaires who are going to support them because they know that once they get into office, they're going to support the millionaire class.
Right, and that's especially true of the Senate. The Congress, you'll see a lot of professionals and whatnot, but still. Plenty of millionaires.
Right. Well, I mean, and I think there are laws that say that you have to maintain a residence in
your home
district.
Yeah.
And you have to be in D.C.
You have to be available in D.C. And I mean, there is a tradition of members of Congress sort of doubling up and sharing places or just renting a room somewhere. Like, I mean
that's what the movie Animal House is based on. I think
there are plenty of people who have gone to Washington to represent their district who have not been crazy wealthy.
Right.
Or who've chosen, you know, my family's back at home. Mm-hmm. That's where they're staying. And so I'm not going to take money out of basically my family's pockets to have a big posh apartment in
D.C. Right.
Nonetheless, we're kind of off a little bit off topic.
But it is fascinating that sort of the religious makeup. I mean, the makeup of Congress in general does not match the makeup of the United States of America.
Where are the nuns, the N-O-N-E's
yes.
in Congress?
Right.
When we know that 20% of the country now is nun.
Yeah.
Self-identifies as not a part of anything.
Right.
Right.
Except that, very least, whether this is true or not.
Uh-huh.
The prevailing wisdom in both the Democrat and Republican Party is if you run, you have to say because people want to vote for a religious person.
Right.
It almost doesn't matter what the religion is. They just want to be assured that there is a faith there grounding that person or whatever.
Like getting atheists into office, should be something that we're working on.
Yeah.
I mean, it really should.
A lot.
But in addition to that, boy, effing hard.
Yeah.
You're only people who live probably in the most liberal urban districts
mm-hmm.
ever stand a chance of being open about their atheism and also being successful, a successful candidate.
Yeah.
But
it
rough,
is interesting
rough stuff.
How evangelical Protestantism, and believe me, I'm not complaining much about this. They are not well represented in.
Seriously?
I don't think so. I mean, you think about this. Who's on the Supreme Court?
It's like Catholics and Jews.
It's only Catholics and Jews.
No, Gorsuch isn't. He's some kind of Protestant, is he?
No, I don't know. I think he's Catholic.
Huh. Anywho, I think there's a lot of Catholics.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, but I mean, it's always very mainline.
Right. What I'm talking about is the fact that, you know, evangelical Protestantism is a quarter of our country.
Right.
And I don't think it's a quarter of our...
Well, do you think they produce a lot of brilliant lawyers? Who I mean, stay evangelical?
They produced Roy Moore.
I hate to say that, but yeah. Like, they probably aren't producing, I mean, who knows? Of course they are. I mean, you can only take these things so far.
Remember? Right.
But like, yeah, no, Mormons, they have this idea about themselves, right? There's the white horse prophecy that they will at some point, a Mormon will stand up and basically save the country. They'll save the Constitution. And for a long time, the little murmur amongst Mormon circles,
yeah,
that it's Mitt Romney, right?
Yeah.
He's the white horse.
Yeah.
Right? And he's going to come swooping in right at the right moment. And so, of course, the man wins the Senate.
Well, yeah. Utah. I mean, literally, he could have raped a child and still won that Senate seat.
Yeah.
Without running an ad. That guy, it would have been impossible for him to not win that Senate seat.
I know.
I don't know what, yeah, if he had punched an old lady in the eye on camera in full view of everyone and it went viral, I think he still would have won.
Well, people would, yeah, they'd have been like, she deserved it.
Yeah, what did she do?
Yeah.
What's her problem?
She insulted dressage.
Right. God love, listen, if your savior on this earth is Mittens J. Romney III, that you are in trouble, people.
Yeah.
If that man is your white horse,
let me tell you though,
forget about
it. He so far has been standing up and saying a few things.
Oh,
he
says
not in
things.
Office yet. I know.
He says things. He'll turn around and say the opposite later.
I know. But if he could continue, and if he would just take the position of I'm the one senator who's against Trump.
Right.
Right.
Opposition, not a full opposition,
right.
just a reasonable opposition.
When he needs to be called out, he's called out.
It's not okay to say that the press is our enemy.
Right.
Just say
and he
said that.
And he did say that.
We'll see if he holds his ground.
Right.
But he said it.
But if he could take that role, some respect would start to develop for Mitt Romney from me.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's a role that could be really important right now.
He's,
and we know that, like we know where he stands on, well, I guess that's the one thing about Mitt Romney. You never really know where he stands.
Because he says, there have been moments in my watching of Mitt Romney where I've been like, oh, you know what? Okay. But, and then he fucking backs down off of it.
I know. Yeah. But the one thing is, don't you just get the impression that he just wants civility?
I get the impression that he wants civility until someone tells him not to. Until someone in the party is like, stop wanting civility. And then he goes, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, of course I don't want that.
He's definitely a party man. That goes without saying.
But he is a Mormon, too.
But he is not. I just don't see him being fully party of Trump.
No, I don't either. And part of him wanting civility thing is that he is a true Mormon.
Yeah.
And he's just afraid of conflict.
He was a successful businessman. He understands how to like.
Yeah, he's still. I just think that
conflict
when it comes right down to it. Contention is just not.
Is of the devil.
Is of the devil. He's a Mormon.
He and Anne, their fights are epic.
Yeah, well, it's well. They both get quiet for a month and a half. They disagree on anything, and then it's just they don't talk to each other at the dinner table for a while until it goes away.
Past the corn,
yeah,
and then and then the ice is broken. Now everything's fine.
Oh, good Lord!
All right.
Well, kids. We thank you so much for listening. If you want to write into us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or call and leave us a voicemail message. The telephone number is 424-666-8442.
Yeah, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
And while you're on Facebook, search for the TGIA Members Only Lounge and request to join.
Also Reddit, you can go to reddit.com/r/TGIAtheist.
And don't forget, it's going to be a big month for us.
Yeah, hey, we really, really want to do good things for the FFRF. So if you also agree that now is a very important time to stand up for the separation of church and state, why don't you be, now's the great time to become a donor, a patron of our show. So that's Patreon. You go to our Patreon thing at thankgodimatheist.com.
There you go. And a big thanks goes out to the Red Rock Hot Club for the use of their music.
Yep. And thanks to Sarah and Danny for being moderators on the Members Only Lounge. Thanks so much to Mackenzie for doing her hard work on the Facebook page.
And a thanks goes out to Gordon Johnston for the use of his music.
Yes. And thank all of you for tuning in.
Bye.
Bye.
What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Cases and cases of confidence.
Staples can help give you the confidence that your business is ready for the year ahead with all the supplies you need.
Like paper. And right now, when you buy a 10-ream case of Staples multipurpose paper, you get one free.
So you can be confident you're ready for whatever business comes your way.
Buy one case of Staples multipurpose paper, get one free. Now at Staples, where there's a whole lot in store.
In store only, limit 10. Valid through 1/5/19.